Hey folks, Jack here with another episode of The Generalist. Today I have Mille. She is the art director and co-founder of the studio Flathead Studio. And that is an Austrian studio, actually, where I live. They are specialized in VR games, and they made quite unique ones so far. We are one where it's a time loop, and you play yourself in different states to solve puzzles right there. The other one, the new one that is going to come out, Deadly Delivery, where it's kind of like a Lethal Company, but in VR with a twist. We'll talk a lot about those two. But the reason I had Mille on is because I think they spark hope in the industry right now. The real work that goes into a successful indie title. This one is a bit unique of that we went into a form of a talk, a form of a podcast, and a form of an interview. So you will see us going through one of her talks that I attended, that I had questions for that I wanted to expand on. So we were able to do that right now on this podcast episode. I really hope you guys will enjoy this because I enjoyed it a lot. I'm a huge fan of Flathead Studios and I think they're doing an amazing job with their games. All right, before we go, please, if you haven't liked yet or subscribed, please do so. It really helps the channel so I can make more of this content and innovate more on my podcast episode. I'll let you enjoy it.
Hello, everyone. Today I have Mille. Mille, please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Mille, full name Melanie Bartel. I'm one of the co-founders at Flathead Studio. And my role there in the company is art director and also lead 3D artist and 2D artist. Yeah, and we make mainly virtual reality games. We founded in 2021. And I'm living in Vienna, but I am from Tyrol, but I have no dialect at all. So
yeah, I mean, that is
fun fact.
Perfect. So you're based in Austria. That is great. So am I as well. So I wanted to ask you, take us through your journey, like your childhood a little bit and all the way to where, you know, where you are right now.
So where the when does the interesting things happen in the childhood? I always drew a lot, like really a lot. And my grandparents from my mother's side was an art teacher. I've never met him, but I have the very old sketches of him. Mm-hmm. And they're amazing. And I think I got the art skills or art motivation from his side. School-wise, I visited the HTL Bau und Design in Innsbruck. where I studied graphic design. So I have a graphic design Ausbildung. What's that in English?
Education.
Education. Yeah, by the way, my English is not the yellow of the egg.
Yeah. I got your back, don't worry.
Oh, thank you. For the diploma project of the school, I made a graphic novel with a friend. So it was a two-person project that was based on a book called The Café on the Border at the World, in German, Das Café am Rande der Welt. Mm-hmm. It is originally in English, but I can't remember the title right now. That was a real fun project, a big milestone probably in my development, art skills development. And after that, I visited the University of Applied Sciences in Salzburg, FH Salzburg, where I studied multimedia art in bachelor and master.
What was that? Which year?
Started 2016 and officially I never made the master to the end, so I never wrote the thesis, but I think the studies ended in 2021.
Gotcha. And so how does Flat Studios then start from the university?
During the master studies, we had to make a university, like a master project. Mm-hmm. And everything started back then, 2019. We were all searching other groups, like what do you want to do for a project? And then I found the three coders, Philip, Dani, and Arnold. Hmm. And me as an artist, and we said, okay, VR is pretty nice. Let's do a VR game.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of everything, basically.
Why VR? Like, was it a topic back in the day, like in 2019? I remember it being a hype back in the day, yeah.
Absolutely. There was a big hype starting around 2017 or 16, I believe. Also in during my internship and the bachelor studies at Media Squad in Tyrol, I got in contact with like the Oculus Go back then, and that
Cool.
was Sixdorf, one of the first commercial widely used VR headsets, but
Yeah.
it's only Friedhof and not Sixdorf. It means it can only do this and not this.
Gotcha.
Okay, that's a podcast, so
Nor is
okay.
it just people watch the store.
Nice. That was my first contact, and I already knew, okay, VR is really interesting, and especially Arnold in the group is a huge VR nerd, and he showed us multiple games and kind of, überzeugen.
Impressing or
Yeah,
impressed?
überzeugen uns, let's make a VR game.
Ah, he convinced you.
Yeah,
Yeah,
convincing.
convinced you.
He
Gotcha,
totally
gotcha.
convinced us.
Yeah.
And then we made over 100 ideas. Like we brainstormed a lot of ideas during the studies. We got told by professors and the teachers that the idea is the most important thing of a game.
Yeah.
And we took that to our heart and tried really to find something that is unique and resonates with all of the group, also with our group members. And while the other groups already started prototyping, making their games for the project, we were still brainstorming. So we were quite late. But in the end, we found the idea of, which is now the game we are one, cloning yourself in virtual reality with short time loops and then playing together with your past and future selves.
Wow, that's a tough idea to implement, that's for sure.
Absolutely. For the coders, the biggest issue they had to tackle was the so-called determinismus, which means that everything has to repeat exactly the same way. If it does not, then the game will not work.
Yeah.
But I got it.
How hard is that? I guess it's a memory, like the structure needs to be very carefully made, I guess. Not to dive
Yeah,
too much into tech.
I have no idea. I'm not a
Exactly.
coder, but I
Exactly.
only know the talks they had with the professor of the codes,
Yeah.
MMT part department, and they were intense and they struggled, but in the end they got it, and
Perfect.
that was a huge achievement for the game.
Yeah. How did the game do then? Once it got released.
We make a time jump
Yep.
3, 4 years later.
Wow, okay. So there's a lot of
So
stuff to say there.
yeah,
Yeah,
there's a lot
yeah,
of things that,
yeah.
okay,
Wow.
there's a really nice story I have to mention.
Yeah, go ahead.
The main reason why we made the company, or even thinking about, okay, this game from the university project could be a full game, like a real game on the platform to buy, was that we accidentally released it
Wow.
once. We used a website that's called SideQuest, where you can upload your VR build, your VR game, and then share the link to other people. We used this website so our professors could access the build and then rate it and play it and give us feedback.
Gotcha.
And it was not public,
Yeah.
so you can choose make it public or not. And one day the link didn't work anymore, and Arnold, he was like there sitting and thinking, oh, no worries, he will just make it public, the game,
Okay.
the prototype we were working on. And in the next coming days, we suddenly got reviews and comments on the game saying, hey, that's a really nice game idea, and they love it. And it got more and more and more. And this convinced us to, okay, maybe this game has potential and we should like work on it further, even after university.
Wow, I mean, that means the core of the game was very resonating with people.
Totally.
Then you know that you're making something really unique. How far was the art, would you say?
It was so ugly. So I was obviously the bottleneck. One artist, three coders. The coders, they were fast with prototyping, making levels, making the puzzles. And I was just there. Okay, I try my best. But it's also on me because our arts pipeline for this game is quite experimental and very time consuming. So at the moment when the prototype as a very early alpha, yeah, maybe not even alpha build with some levels went live, it was just gray box and
Wow.
very ugly. But that's every game at the very beginning, I would say.
Very prototypey, yeah, just communicating the basic ideas. Yeah, but I mean, if people were, playing it and it was resonating with them, even though the art, let's say, was not there yet, that means that you got something really, really, at its core, it's playable, and it's unique, right? And I rarely see innovation in this industry generally, not just VR, like in this industry completely. Do you think choosing VR had forced your hand to innovate, or were you like looking at the industry and wanting to pioneer in something anyway, no matter what the medium was?
We researched a lot of other VR games that were out back then. For example, Pistol Whip, Superhot, Beat Saber, and so on and so on. And there's a reason why we brainstormed over 100 ideas, because I think the whole team was very excited for something new and not making a clone, not doing something that's already existing in a different way. And I'm not sure if we like actively think about it. Yeah, let's make something innovative. It was like more like a stomach feeling, belly feeling to do it. There was a game out there that's roughly based on the, I mean, Time Loop is not completely new. There are games out there which
Absolutely.
use time loops, and there was a browser game we played some months ago with the in class. I think it's called Mouse Mouse or something, where you play with your mouse, like in the browser with your clicker mouse, and your mouse is in a time loop and can reappear from the past. And then you have to work with your own mouse cursor. Insane game, very funny, but that's also. That was a huge inspiration for doing time loops or working with clones.
Wow. I mean, Atzel, what a hard thing to design over. Because you're not gonna predict how the player is gonna. It's you're almost like doing a 4D game, right? Because you're also considering the time element of it.
Oh, for sure. Philip, who was mainly doing the level design for each puzzle, he had a hard time, but a fun time. When he showed a new level and explained it or show it to us without any explanation, we try to solve it. You always have to think about time and what will happen and what just happened. That's, yeah, as you said, it's the fourth D dimension.
I bet it was really difficult to talk to Philip during the
Yeah.
fixations, because I bet they were like, but what if the player did, go back
Exactly.
to this.
Those were the dialogues. Insane. And because the build was already at some point live, we got there were people making videos about this very ugly game, but they liked the puzzles, and sometimes they solved the level, and Philip was like, he never thought that you could solve it in this way. And that's also a really interesting point of the game, that sometimes you can find a completely new solution for the problem.
I bet the people who are hearing this now are very curious what it is. You'll find the link down below. It's called We Are One, like VR1, but We Are One. I guess the naming was there, right, with the VR? That's why you chose We Are.
Yeah,
Kind of.
secondly, but primarily it's more the we are one as wir sind eins, because all your clones in the end are
True.
one.
There's also mention to nature, right? With the
Yes.
art later on, that we are all one, like we're all part of nature, right? It's also
Yes.
this is so incredibly creative. So talking about creativity, like what drives your creativity mainly?
What drives my creativity? I'm a very visual person in general. Like watching, seeing, looking is my main hobby activity. Anime, series, etc. And
Nice.
as a teen child, watching anime, drawing my stuff was huge. And I have a little anecdote to tell about the topic creativity, which I find it quite funny and a bit scary. So when I turned 18, my mother gifted me a book in that's called Das Gummibären Orakel. The
Okay.
Gummy Bear Oracle.
Oracle. Yeah, got
Yeah.
it.
It's a book with a lot of text, but basically it's a game where you buy a pack of gummy bears. You close your eyes and you pick five random gummy bears out of the package. And then you look at the colors. And in the book, you can then see what color combination and this will tell you things about yourself and about
Interesting.
your future.
Okay.
So the scary part was I took a color combination first time. And the book says, oh, you're very creative. You will be in the future somewhere in the marketing apartment. The colors represent the marketing awards from New York, and you can
Interesting.
present yourself very creatively.
Yeah.
And you like to draw, you like to present and stuff. And I was like, wow, that's scary, because creativity, okay, that's a huge, huge thing for me.
And was it true? Did you get r awards in New York, or was it close?
It was close. Like our game, we have won. Spoiler, we got finalists at the DICE Awards in Las Vegas, but that's not New York.
It's close enough,
Yeah,
though. It's
close
close
enough.
enough. So I think we're jumping like a lot, but generally, it's good because we're going through the topics quickly so people have an overview. So it starts as a university project, four people, right? How the heck do you still make it 4 years later? That sounds impossible.
So the company structure changed a little bit. One person completely left the company. He wanted to do his own after we are one. Currently in the core team, we are three people. And after we are one, like university, we are one started. We made the company because of fundings, and then we are one got released. And right now, we are still here. We achieved the 3 years mark. The struggle years as a Selbstständiger, the thing you have to watch out. But we got it, and we are fully funded with the new project, Deadly Delivery.
Deadly Delivery. And how did you make it through the 3 years? Were you funded by yourself, or what was the main?
We got funding for We Are One from multiple organizations. The first thing we got was AWS First Impact. That was a huge funding, a state funding. That was also the reason why we had to make the company. So none of us were like, we want to make a company, but we had to because we wanted the money. And then we kind of rolled into the, yeah, you own a company. That's your future now. That was funny. The other funding options we got for We Are One were AWS, what's it called? The first one was Creative Impact, and the second was First Incubator. Also a startup funding where we
Wow.
got money and a lot of workshops that helped us learning entrepreneur skills,
Wow.
marketing skills,
That's
et
amazing.
cetera.
That's
That's
amazing.
really nice. We also got a lot of support from the local FH Startup Center. from the university. Shout out to Natasha. She helped us so much. It's insane. And then we also got funding from Salzburg with, I think it's called Factory.
Awesome. I was not expecting Salzburg to be there in the conversation, but hey, you never, you know, it is, it's fine. I lived in Salzburg for a while, so I lost hope of the city, but it's nice to hear that something positive happened there at one point.
Yeah, totally. No, during the startup phase, they helped us a lot and we got a little funding, also a lot of workshops there.
Wow, that is great.
Really, really good for us.
Wow, that is awesome. Like, you got a lot of support, but you wouldn't say that would have been possible without, like, having a solid project. Would you say so?
Absolutely. The project has to be solid, as you said. And you also, as a person, you have to be conscious, or no, what do we want to say? You have to think, okay, you're making a company.
Yep.
You have to get to know this whole world of entrepreneurship and to think about your project not as a little, oh, that's cute, my love, my heart, my baby. Yep. As this has to make money, or it has, you think about target group and marketing and retention and prices and budget and burn rate and.
How would you say, decisions like these have changed the game entirely? Like, when you maybe sat down with a team and you felt maybe the game was not heading towards a money-making project, or it was heading more towards an art project, how did you balance it? How did you, like, have the wake-up call?
It started totally as an art project. Yeah. For example, the art direction, as I mentioned, was very experimental with the watercolors, textures. Or the whole art pipeline, which is time consuming.
Yep.
As can I swear?
Yeah, as fuck.
As fuck. Yeah. which in hindsight is not recommended for if you do budgeting and scope analyzing and all that stuff. There was also another example where we had to think about the future, about what happens when the game releases finally and we want to make money, was the free demo. The free demo of We Are One got over 200,000 downloads.
What?
Yeah, a lot of people played the demo. But the issue was we had a lot of levels inside the demo initially, and then we thought, okay, when the people have the free demo with over 20 levels, why should they buy afterwards the full game?
Yeah.
If it's too much. So we had to reduce the levels at one point just to have something that will spark interest but not fulfill the whole interest, so that the people will buy the game afterwards when it releases.
Yeah. And who's making all those decisions on the team? Is it like one person or everybody?
We're totally back then. Fourth today, three people making all the decisions. That's a group effort. Totally.
It's really awesome that everybody's on, like, on the same page, because oftentimes with, like, you know, conditions like yours, where it's like four founders or five founders, it's always like either one or two that are not on the same page. But if you can all just compromise and, you know, focus on what is good for your company first of all and for the project, that is awesome. And it is really not luck. It's more like a careful selection of your founders at the start. And I think you picked, you did that really, really, really well. Because a lot of people can't reach that level of agreement, let's say.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's a little bit of luck. And maybe I suppose our characteristics and personal differences are fitting together very well. Like, I'm more of the not depressive, what's called, pessimistic. Yeah, that's the pessimistic style. And we have Philip, who's very, very optimistic and say, nah, this gets you, everything will be fine. Yeah. And Dani is the ultra realist, and he always thinks about things nobody thinks about. And I think the combination of us is perfect.
That is crazy. Like, to have the three ways of looking at the world together as founders, that is awesome because you keep yourself in balance, right? The realist keeps both in balance, right? The optimist is like, if everybody was an optimist, there will be no money made there for sure.
Yeah.
It will be fine. It will be fine. And then nothing will change, you know. Not depressed, but like the pessimist way, if all of you were pessimists, like the project probably will not finish, right?
Yeah.
At one point. But it's awesome that you were able to bring, like, it's luck in a way, but still. I don't like to throw everything to luck because you had the choice to be together, right? Like as a company, and that made it work. Okay. So I think we talked about mainly everything before we dive into the presentation, right? Perfect. Yep. I think the only thing we didn't talk about so far is the community, how that grew.
For the current game.
Yes.
That's all the, like, current game is called Deadly Delivery. We have worked on it for 1.5 years or roughly 2 years now. Mm-hmm. It's a multiplayer game and there's a community. That's a huge thing.
It's really huge.
To look out. That's if you do a multiplayer game, you have to look out for community building and making a space for the people to meet. And yeah, we started a community Discord server for the new game back in May. Mm-hmm. And it's going really well. We already have over 6,000 people on there.
It is awesome.
The people are really looking forward to the release of the game.
Yeah. It's a super active community. And I was always so impressed when I landed there. I was like, wow, that's huge. The trailer is also very well made. So I guess the question here before we dive into the presentation, how does one communicate to the masses about their project?
We had the announcement of the newest game back in May, where everything with the community started, and I think the announcement is usually the first marketing beat you do. You make a trailer, like the announcement trailer. We made it ourselves in a week. We set up the Discord servers, we set up the pages for wishlisting. How do we communicate with the masses? It's
a combination of many way, things. Right? It's a very particular way, and I think it's a skill that you have to master. So one of you must have had that skill before the project, right?
Not so sure. Again, it's a lot of team effort. For example, Dani is really into marketing and having a big overview about all the things that affects your game announcement or your build up of a community. For example, if the people talk about it on Reddit or other Discord servers that are focused on virtual reality, if they talk about the game, looking at YouTube, looking at the comments of bigger VR influencers, if there's something. And also we copied a lot of some marketing or community building strategies from other games.
Yeah.
Because it is a thing that you share with the others. It's not the I have a strategy and no one, that's mine and no one can copy it.
Yeah, it's like you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Right?
Totally.
Yeah. So you basically looked at a lot of references. Similar, your approach is kind of like art and you, not copy, but I would say you didn't reinvent the wheel and went about it that way, right?
With Deadly Delivery?
Yeah.
The concept of the game. Yeah, we went from completely unique thing with VR1 to, okay, let's look at the market and let's see what currently is going really well and something that we also like to play. And we found Lethal Company. We played it a lot.
Yeah,
it's hilarious. It's fun. Amazing. It's co-op. It's and the combination of horror and the goofiness of teamwork is so amazing. Yeah. And no wonder everyone, especially on team, is like making a Lethal Company like game right now.
Yep.
with Content Warning that came out last year, Repo came out
Repo,
last
yeah.
year. What's a recent release? Like Peak some months ago.
Peak, true, yeah, that is very close. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we said, okay, for our next virtual reality project after Wear One, let's try this out to make a project that's out there but not really used yet on the virtual reality
Yeah.
market.
You're again doing it again. Taking a medium that has not been explored yet to its fullest and enhancing it by taking game mechanics that maybe already existed, but now offering it in a package that no one else in the market is offering because either they are too afraid to do it because, oh, what if it fails and they don't want to take a risk, but you're taking the risk and it's paying off because you read the market well. Like the reason I smile when you talk was I'm like, that is exactly how I would have approached it if I had a team, right? Like I'm smiling because like how can those big come and it's a good thing they don't see this, but I'm like, how can they not see this? How can they not believe that this would work? And it's all like beyond awesome that a local like in Austria, a local team of three is doing this. And it really makes me so happy. All right, so let's
Thank
dive
you.
into the presentation now. To show a little bit of your art, to show a little bit of your process, because I think it's one of the most unique ones I've ever seen.
Oh, thank
Because
you.
you use traditional and digital, and I think that is just brings the two worlds together. And I think it is the future, especially with AI around. We need to bring traditional with digital in a way, either leaning more towards digital or leaning more towards traditional. So I think you're doing that very well. So I will switch now to the
Oh,
screen
thanks.
share element here. So. Hey you! Sorry to interrupt, but if you're really enjoying this episode, don't just watch. Let me know what you think in the comments. It really motivates me and helps the channel. Leave a like if you like it and subscribe. It's a simple thing, but it really helps the channel. Thanks so much.
Dear little Sproutling, you are a special one, able to experience time a bit more flexible.
Wow. Awesome.
Other selves. You created a part of me.
Hell yeah. But those are the clones. Oh my god. Cool. This just makes me smile.
We are connected. We are nature. We are one.
Oh my. God, this is awesome. Okay, I can't wait until you dissect like the art style now and tell me more about that.
Yeah, so we are one, as you can see, that's quite organic but also very cartoony.
Yeah.
And I think you can see the Borderlands inspiration. Borderlands was a huge inspiration during the art development of this game.
Yeah, I can see that. But it's less dirty in a way. You know what I mean? Like, I guess it's the vibrance of the colors that are making it less dirty in that sense.
I think it's also the combination of the watercolor textures, like they are quite soft and subtle. And then you have the bold black outlines and the bold black details on each of the assets.
Yeah.
Yeah, we use abstract colors, as you already said, that have a high complementary contrast. For example, in all the levels that are nature inspired, like a forest, it's green and
Yeah.
has color, and the further you go into the world of the machines, it gets less colorful, like only grayish, and you only have the skybox and the fog that gives it various bold colors. For example,
Wow.
here the red thing.
It's just so unique.
We try to achieve that all the important things, like the clones over here, and the weapons and the important assets are highly saturated, very using abstract colors, have bold outlines, and everything in that is part of the environment has lower saturation, has more simplified shapes, and is not as in your face as the characters or the items.
What was the reason to make them stick out more? Is it because you see your own clones in the game?
Gameplay. Just so the we saw during play testing phases that at one point it was just too much greenery and stuff, and then you lose the overview of the important things.
Gotcha.
For example, do you see my mouse?
Yeah, I see your mouse.
So these things are the only areas where you can spawn a clone, like a sproutling, and you have to be able to catch them from far away. That's why we tried to...
What does this plant mean then, this little plant there on the right?
That means that you can choose it for another clone. I think this clone is here. Then here should be another grayish area. And for the next one, you can make another clone over here.
Gotcha.
It's not easy to explain. Yeah.
No. It is. I got it. Yeah. I'm really excited to take the art style apart now.
There's a comparison how the exact same level looked earlier during development, without light baking, without the fog, without any of the forest environments.
Yeah.
But in our pipeline, all the gameplay relevant things like the game design and the levels were prototyped, and then afterwards we put all the art.
It's funny you say early development, but this looks final. This looks finished.
It's ugly. Don't say that. early 2021 May.
Yeah, that is like 2 years into development, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of. Mm. We spent end of 2019 with brainstorming and prototyping started. Yeah, beginning of 2020.
Perfect.
Like this. So you can see this is the overview where you start a level, then you can select spots to grow your clones. Mm. And those orange things are the robots. And in each level, the main goal is to shoot all robots because the robots are evil and they do too much. They steal the resources of the nature. And that's the lore of the game, basically.
Awesome. It's hitting too much at home, you know, like with the current settings of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nature versus machines. Yeah. Or as interesting. Yeah.
Also
as
AI and art. It's really resonating.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a new meta topic.
Yes.
New layer. That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see the art development from Ezra. That's the final look of the level. And it took a lot of effort and time to get from here to the final look.
Yeah, we're talking 3 years almost.
Mm.
All right.
This is like at the very beginning during university when I started the art.
VR is resonating much more than if it was completely digital, and especially like with the world right now with AI taking over the digital world, let's say. I think we need to, you know, make workflows like that more often now, especially in game development.
Yeah.
I think that is what will make your project unique. The more you do of that, the more it's going to be unique, I feel.
I'm totally with you. That's the creativity of the medium has so much impact. For example, there's a game out there currently. I saw a video about it. They make all the assets with clay in real life and then make stop motion, make photos of it, and then you have the single animation clips of each asset. For example, the explosion, but made from clay.
Wow.
And the whole game is
awesome.
Just clay.
Wow.
It looks amazing. I love it.
More of that, please, people. More of that.
Yeah.
Less of the AI stuff. This bubble will burst, I'm telling you. All right, let's go.
So the workflow, because everything was handmade, as each asset is really handmade. We didn't use any procedural generated shaders or something in that direction. It was time intense.
Yep.
So not each asset uses a unique UV set, but most of them uses it. And for the watercolor textures, I painted multiple A3 papers in real life, scanned it, and in the end, I have a huge library of various watercolor texture variants and gradients and strokes. And for example, here, the little circles or the gradients over there that I can later on use in the asset production of each asset.
Wow.
And the black lines, these are made in Substance or in Photoshop digitally with my drawing tablet. And here's an example of a pile of wood.
Wow.
That is quite low poly without the texture, and then I clicked on the texture.
That's so crazy. That's such a crazy transformation. Like,
oh,
when I
you.
Saw this, although I was busy like doing my slides in Graz, right? I was like, wow, she's really good. That is incredible. That
oh,
is
thank
so
you.
Good. And because it makes sense, you know, VR is very heavy. You're literally rendering the same scene twice in 4K,
mm-hmm.
right? And you're stitching it together. So this here, that's amazing. It's amazing how the limitation becomes the unique part of your project. I
yeah.
love this stuff.
Oh, the limitation, it sparks creativity and innovation. The more
exactly.
you're limited, the more creative you have to become.
Exactly.
For this game, we only use the albedo map, also the color map.
Yep.
We don't use any normal maps or smoothness, glossiness, roughness.
Yeah.
That's also better for performance, but we don't need it for the art style we implemented. This is, for example, Mother Nature down there in her final form. Everything you can see here is made inside the texture.
This is crazy. This is awesome.
So,
I love this.
Thank
More
you.
Of this. This is so cool.
More of her. So I made her hands as a little gift showing the modeling process, then
wow.
the first texturing process. I always start with the black lines, like the details. It's I'm drawing a comic, but on the textures.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned with the graphic novel I did back in HTL, it's a skill like... It's very cartoony, comic-like, but the mix with the watercolors makes it a bit more softer, and the colors overall make it softer and interesting to look at. Down here we have the example of one of the heart of the machines.
Mm.
They appear in the end games. So spoiler alert.
Wow. I just love the steps here. So the second step, you added the color, right?
The green one is just a proof color.
Got it.
It doesn't mean anything.
The third?
But I start with the black lines, the details. This is all drawn in down here. And here I start implementing the watercolor textures. And that's the final.
That is awesome.
The final look.
It's all in Substance, right? Like it can also be done in Blender, basically, but it's
so the 3D
Substance.
Models, I use Maya, Autodesk Maya, and for texturing for VR1, I mainly use Substance and sometimes Photoshop.
Got it. What is this? Such an awesome looking thing.
Oh, so regarding the outlines, so if you were wondering how we made the outlines, we did not use a shader, and we have here, the sound
normals,
is not
right?
important. Yeah, we.
Here we go.
Use the old school version.
Yeah, the better looking one, in my opinion.
It depends. Like, so we didn't use a shader because we tried out many shaders with the Quest 1, and the Quest 1 is a potato in regarding performance, and we had so much better performance with this approach where you. Copy your asset, make a duplicate,
flip the normals.
Extrude the normals, flip it, and make it black.
Yeah.
And then we got a little shitstorm on TikTok because the people just couldn't comprehend that this is better for our use case than just using a shader.
It is
and
much
it was really
easier.
Interesting.
Yeah. Especially if your meshes are optimized, that's exactly the way you would go. It's funny though, like the would you say would you encourage small companies or indie companies to share more of their development on TikTok or on social media.
Totally. Yeah, if I follow someone on social media, primarily there are game devs who show their stuff and their behind the scenes. And for me, it's super interesting to see how other people made their art assets or their shaders or how they solved the issue.
Mm.
On the other hand, yeah, you could spark quite a discussion in the comments if someone just knows the way to do it with shaders. Mm. I mean, doing the outlines in this way does add work because every asset has to be, has handmade outlines.
Mm.
It's not as easy as just putting a shader on it.
Totally.
With the current game, we use the shader because it's not necessary. We found a shader that is quite optimized, but it was like We Are One was 3-4 years ago when we made the outlines. So, and Quest 1E regarding performance. But people also started to defend us.
Nice.
In some of the comments, that it was so fun, especially backup. People from the VR industry that they know the restrictions from Quest. Yeah.
Would you say like videos like this, when they go viral, right? Do you get downloads from them? Like, do you get people that are interested in your game that follow you eventually, or is it just like passing by?
It's just passing by. We didn't get, I think, a lot of push lists or anything from out of this, even though it's almost 3 million views.
Yeah.
I mean, people like to comment, especially if it's in their industry. Also, we gathered all the game devs from TikTok on this post.
They knew about your project. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay.
All right. Here it is.
The next current project after We Are One is Deadly Delivery.
Mm.
And hopefully it comes out later this year. And fun fact, I can share with you the release date.
Yeah.
Because we just announced it.
Yeah.
It's December 4th. 4th December.
Perfect.
It will come out on MetaQuest and Steam VR. And it's multiplayer this time, where you can play with your friends in groups of four. It's co-op. It's basically a Lethal Company-like, where you have a goal and you try not to die. Mm. So in this game, you are all goblins, delivery goblins, and you have to deliver parcels into haunted caves and mines. And there inside these caves are monsters and various hazards that will try to kill you or haunt you.
Shall we play the trailer?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to play it right now. So give me a second here. Perfect. Here we go. In 1, 2, 3.
To the dungeon, deliver the packages, bring back the money, and maybe don't die.
Maybe don't die.
It's going to be so easy.
It's going to be so easy.
Oh, nice. There's a door.
Oh, that's you.
Wait.
Oh,
nice. Let's get this.
Yeah.
Okay, someone else. Hello. Hello.
Oh.
I will fill. Wait. Thanks. Oh, there's a jump. Oh. Shoot. God damn. Okay, I'm going down a lever. I'll update you guys. Over.
I love this.
The most important feature, you can slap each other.
That is the killer. Like, that's why you got so much into the community. People want to slap each other, that's for sure. What an amazing trailer. Like, where do you start? Like, you have to be an awesome person to be able to, like, you have to be funny, right? You have to be, like, up to date to what works, I feel. Like, I don't know. You can't teach that, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, for example, at the beginning from the trailer, the very short clips of what will happen is called foreshadowing, and it was a trend on TikTok.
Got
it. We saw that and we were like, yeah, we have to do that. So we try to implement current social media trends into the trailer.
Wow.
And for this trailer, we recorded ourselves, and as a preparation for talking in English, we said, okay, at the day of the recording, we will just start the day and just talk English so we can get into the mood and the jokes.
Love it. Wow. So you're reading, you're not doing this out of like improvising. You're doing it, you're studying it, and then
We also made a script.
Script and everything.
Trying out, seeing what scenes we can play, which are funny for the trailer. So we don't do a lot of improvising at all in our company, I think.
Yeah. I think that is a great point to put here, because the trailer feels improvised. However, it's very, like, if you look into it, it's very planned. Because I think a lot of people look at a trailer like this, they're like, of course, like, these people are funny. They're amazing. Like, they could just record any video and it would work. It's easy to go into that mindset. But when I hear it from you and you're like, we actually planned this, we actually wrote a script, I'm like, okay, so if I approach it the same way you approach it, I can also, or I might also, you know, make something as unique as that, right?
Mm-hmm. That was the huge challenge, to make a script and then record all the things and not make it look like we just do what the script says. So,
how do you not make it artificial or sound artificial? You know, because you could go the route of like planning everything, but then it feels very, you know, planned, very scripty.
Taking a lot of takes.
Mm.
And our game has the nice side effect that it brings weird situations with the monsters, because the whole dungeon is procedurally generated. So we don't know what will happen inside the dungeon.
That's
if,
awesome.
For example, there's the monster from the ceiling, and at the same time, a Krampus can appear just behind you, and then the whole script is ruined because it was not planned, but you keep going.
You know, scream. I also love that you took the heritage, you know, the heritage element, and you made his eyes like the Krampus, like the busy icon from Discord.
Mm-hmm.
It's so perfect.
All our monsters and enemies are inspired by Austrian and European folklore creatures. For example, we have the Krampus.
Yep.
The ceiling leech is based on the Tatzelwurm
from
Salzburg.
Smart. Yeah.
We have a Wechselbalg in it. That's first, it's a little girl, and if she gets angry, she will turn into the Wechselbalg.
Yeah.
I have a lot of Märchenbücher here, where I researched interesting tales and creatures and. But it's also important that we do not keep out the gameplay factor.
Yeah.
For example, it has to be a nice mixture of, okay, the feature of this enemy or the game design mechanics of this enemy are interesting and add things to the gameplay, and do not only look at the backstory or the lore. So it has to go hand in hand in the end.
Do you agree that, like, the most unique thing about us is ourselves? That, you know, you wouldn't exist, like, how to say? The fact that you exist is so unique, right? And so when you take your background into it, it makes it even more unique. It would have felt artificial, I feel, if you went by another culture or another, like, if it was more America-based, right? Like anything else in the world, right? Like, the high school here has to look like the high school. You see it on Netflix, like, there's, like, those German high school TV shows, and the high school looks like America's high school. It's like, no, that's not how high schools look in Germany, right? Everybody somehow knows how the high schools look in the U.S. But I love that you took your heritage into this. This is so unique, and it adds to it. Perfect.
It was quite a topic at the beginning of the project when we discussed and brainstormed, okay, what's the lore in the game? We have the gameplay figured out, but what are you? What's the character? What are the enemies? What's the setting? We brainstormed a lot, and in the end, it's Austrian inspired.
Yeah.
slightly, and we found the post delivery very funny. Mm. And for me personally, I love that we got this way. We went with this way because I think our creatures, especially Krampus and all the other mythical creatures we have in the European area, are so underrepresented in modern medium.
Yeah, agreed. And they're so unique. Like, also the traditions that happen yearly. I don't agree with all of it, but it's so unique. It makes Austria what Austria is, right? And it deserves the highlight. It deserves to be highlighted. And it doesn't deserve to be just, you know, put in the back, and this is, you know, this is the culture, this is the background. We're not going to show it in a game because we're going to sell this worldwide. And it's like, why not? You know, go for it. That is what games were about, you know, people in their underwear making games in the basement, right? Like, it's just games, man. And I feel like you have a really good balance between the research element, right? Of like, okay, what does the market want? What is working in the market? But also doing what you feel is right for you without making it artificial. And that is, you could see that in the trailer. You can see it in the art, in every aspect. And it's just perfect. Oh.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
That's a huge compliment.
It's not a compliment. It's the truth. No. Perfect.
But yeah, we try to mix both sides into it, to put our heart into it, but also to keep a business in the mind.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exactly what I wanted to have you here, because like, these things no one teach. And when they happen, everybody says, it's just luck. These people are lucky. It's like, no. Well, just listen to them, you know? There is something here. And it's nice that you prepared all the presentation. Do you go also into, like, the art of deadly delivery?
Yeah.
All right, let's go through it.
So we just saw the trailer. I will skip it.
Mm-hmm.
The art style is also very stylized.
Like, so good.
I think it's our tagline of the company that we cherish visual creativity.
Yeah.
And this time it's way more bolder. It uses realistic color schemes and again the black outlines. I love the outlines. They make everything pop more.
I know, right?
Especially in the VR, I love outlines. And this time the visuals are a bit more realistic, but still comic and stylized with the cross hatching, distance fork. And for the art style development of this game, here's a quick overview of the early research I did.
Oh my god.
And this is the mural board of the current, like, every time I do something art related, making an asset or doing the art development, I archive it in my mural. And it's a little snippet of the mural board. It goes way down there.
For the people who are watching this is ADHD visualized. This is crazy.
But I try. Yeah, I love that everything is in one place, and I can always go back and see, okay, what did I thought over here? Wow. What did I thought a year ago?
Wow.
And for the research, I looked at games that are matched the vibes we want to match. Content Warning is a huge inspiration. I also have here Dungeon of Hinterburg as a reference.
Also from Austria.
Dungeon of Hinterburg. Also Krampus.
Yeah, Austria is the future, I could tell you.
I said, okay, for this project I need 5 pillars to keep in mind doing the art development, just in comparison to VR1. VR1 started as a university project. Burn rate, what is that? You know, like scope, I don't know.
I don't know.
For this project I have to keep stuff in mind. For example, work a lot with shaders, don't do everything by hand just because of time and budget. No high detail texturing, so not every asset takes weeks to create. Manageable with little resources, like low scope. Consistency is this key. That's, I think, should be part of every art style development, that consistency makes art style.
And it's easy to fall into the trap of saying, like, consistency equals a lot of work. That is not always the fact. Right?
Yeah. And the last pillar was a learning from VR 1 that VR 1 looked really nice in VR, but on flat screen it fell a bit flat.
Mm.
And okay, this art style for this game has to look really good on flat screen too, because we try to make a shareable game where you can easily make a video and you want to show it to others.
So this is like not exclusive VR, basically.
Not exclusive, no.
Perfect. It's good to know.
I mean, it is a VR game, but
yeah,
if people play it and then they make shots out of it or screenshots, it should look good.
Mm. Ah, that is what you mean. Got it. Yeah.
Like streamability.
Yeah.
This is a whole new thing for us to keep in mind.
Mm.
And yeah, to make it short, in a nutshell, you could say the art style of Deadly Delivery is what happens if VR 1 and Content Warning makes a baby. Hey, I was highly inspired by Content Warning. Just look at the screenshots. It's a nice mix of extremely moody lighting and bold cross-hatching.
Yep.
And I tried to implement it with the art style of VR 1 because I thought it fits very well together.
That is
so good. In the end, we have the art style of Deadly Delivery.
So basically, you went through VR 1 and you were like, okay, what if we make a project that is totally the opposite in scope and the totally opposite of like the art commitment of like going in, making stuff by hand? What if we use shaders? What if we use proceduralism? And we make...
That's the way.
Yeah. Would you go forward? Would you say like after this project... If I guess you will support it for a while now because it has a following. I think it has a lot of potential. Would you say like for the next project, if you're ever gonna work on one, are you gonna approach it similar to how you did it with Deadly Delivery?
Oh, that highly depends on the project. I mean, personally, I would love to get back into more experimental art style where it's way more hand-on and crafting.
Mm.
Maybe even sogar, as we discussed earlier, analog stuff like real paintings or clay or just creative experimenting. But it depends on the next project, of the scope, of the budget.
Yeah. But your next project will be determined by the market. That is you're sure about. Perfect. Okay.
And how well the Deadly Delivery will do when it launches.
Perfect. That's awesome.
So for Deadly Delivery, the hero objects, quite similar to VR 1 with the level of priority. All the characters, the goblins and the items are hero objects for me, and the asset creation is... they use unique textures. So I start with low poly meshes. I bring them into Substance Painter. And fun fact, you can bake low poly on low poly. You don't need the high poly to get the AO map and curvature maps and all the other maps.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't baked high poly for a long time.
VR problems.
Yeah. So with those maps, you can then use the very nice generators Substance provides. And in a span of multiple weeks, I found out this workflow for the assets that I use this generator in a mix of hand-painted colors and the black lines, plus added the black outlines in Unity.
Yeah.
And this is the final asset.
Perfect.
Like bold...
comic, almost like Hell. What is it called? Hellboy. What is it?
Ah, Hellboy. Yeah.
Yeah, a little Hellboyish, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Without the cell shades.
Shapes,
yeah.
A reduced color palette. Very important to keep the whole thing, a bit more clear and more readable.
Absolutely.
Here's our little insight in how the character sheets look like, which I make. Again, they're not really beautiful, but they are important to work with our freelancers. We have in our team multiple freelancers, so around 10 to 9 in some, with us in some, in total. And I managed at one point 3 art freelancers at the same time. And I have to give them character sheet so they know what they have to model. For example, here the blind monk that is based on a on the mythical creature of the dark monk.
Yeah.
Or here's the Tatzelwurm.
Mm-hmm.
So
cute. It's so cute somehow. I love this project.
And this is a Feuerputz, I think, a saga aus Tirol.
So good.
With a thing that burns.
Whoa, on shaders.
The contrary,
hell yeah.
Shaders, environment. So the environment is not as important as the creatures, player characters, the assets, the packages, and the items. So everything outside of this, the dungeons and the normal environment, should be even more low scoped, so no unique textures at all.
Yeah, because it's procedural as well, so you can't really
make
any uniqueness with it.
For example, in VR1, everything used is almost unique textures or a combination of trim sheets and texture atlas. And for this project, all the environment assets uses like texture atlases not the texture atlas. It uses tile bit textures based on a shader. So I can
make
the shader in shader graph that combines multiple tileable textures.
Yep.
And then you have a combination of various patterns of the hatchings and color variations.
Yep, that makes sense.
And this is really fast. The asset production of environment is fast. Here's an example with the same asset, but
different colors
applied.
Yep.
Wow. The open beta is not, that was in the past, but it will release very soon.
Wow.
We have a website, Deadly Delivery. You can wish list over there or even buy the game. That's the Krampus.
That's the Krampus. Oh my God.
The Krampus.
I love
this. Yeah, that was the little presentation.
Awesome. I mean, clapping, right? Everything. It's I really love this presentation. I feel like it resembles a lot of the current state of the industry, like the not so depressed version, right? Mm. The how could we move forward version, if you may. We see a lot of layoffs here, layoffs there, and it's like, I get it, big companies are suffering, but what about new companies? Like, what about indie? What are we doing, right? And when you mention like the creativity part, the studying the market part, it all feels approachable. It doesn't feel impossible anymore, right? It gives a lot of hope. It also, the concept of like working with freelancers instead of like hiring people and then you have to feed those people every month, I love that concept. It's turning more into a Hollywood. I know a lot of people are not a huge fan of that. I'm a huge fan of that. I love that part. Because like, hire me when you can and don't hire me when you can't. Fine with me. Fair for everybody. Everybody wins.
That depends on so much factor. And we are not there yet to hire anyone.
Yeah.
It's such a huge responsibility on money-wise, but also personal-wise that we are not there yet. So we have to use freelancers.
It makes a lot of sense. I feel like Austria is also not ready for the games industry, right? If we're honest. Like, you have to pay so much taxes for hiring people. It is crazy.
I got the advice from a very established people from the industry that do not hire if you're not ready for it. You do it in the future, but don't do it right now after you founded your company. That was the advice I got.
That's such a good advice. I mean, your whole like Flathead Studios seems to me like it's a combination of a lot of like good people surrounded by you and like the workshops that you got, that good foundation that you've got in the beginning, and that project, the first project that you worked on was a success and it was a unique project, and I feel like it can only grow from this point on.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Yes, I'm really excited to see what you guys are going to work on.
The market is interesting, especially the VR market is a little bit on fire, but we have high hopes for the future, and
in which way is it on fire?
How can I explain it in a short way? Like, we're very dependent on the platform itself, like Meta and Steam, and their decisions have huge impact on how your app is searchable on the platform or how much visibility you get. And they made huge changes in recent months and years that changed everything. For example, when we launched with Wea One, the whole process and how to get onto the store was completely different than right now.
Wow.
It changes a lot. And yeah, you have to adapt. You have to get to know the people and you have to be very flexible for the future.
Would you say it would help if there was a platform that would be flexible or decentralizing in a way?
I mean, it would help if there were more bigger platforms, not only Steam and Meta for the VR scene. I mean, there was Pico from China, but they didn't get as big in the Western countries, I think. And yeah, like Meta has a monopole, you could say, and monopoles are, as always, not the best thing to have.
Final question before we go. What's the future for VR?
Oh, that's a huge question. For us or in general?
Whatever you're comfortable with answering.
VR. I think VR has potential, but it's not easy because VR is exhausting. If you put on a VR headset, it hurts and it's heavy. You can't lay in bed really. And then the iOS of the headsets are often confusing or not as user-friendly with the usability. And so the entry barrier to get comfortable with VR is a lot harder than with a console or with your phone or with, I just turn on my laptop and play some Steam games.
Yep.
I think that's the thing that has to change. And if it changes, VR has such a huge potential to also implement into the everyday life. For example, maybe while cooking, maybe not, or if I do my laundry, I can watch things on VR headset or play a little game that's implemented in my everyday life.
I think it's definitely a tough one, VR. However, there is a market. There's people who already made the purchase of their VR headsets. They can't back down from that, meaning they're always on the look for something fun. They're always on the look for maybe a cross-platform game. And I think that's an area not a lot of devs really explored. It's very underutilized. Cross-platforming, I think, is so fun. Especially VR giants, which are also from Austria. I feel like Austria needs to be the capital of VR. Like, wake up, Austrian government, damn it. Like, come on, let's make this stuff happen. Maybe we make the store. Maybe Austria makes the third store in the world for VR.
That would be awesome.
We make it going. But yeah, I feel like there's a lot of underutilizations happening, a lot of fear from risk. But in the end, you could make a game that is both in VR and not VR. And those who are in VR can be getting the enhanced version of the game, rewarding them even more. I wish there were more support.
We were thinking if we want to do that with the Athlete Delivery, because then you have, if you have a platform on flat screen, you also get the normal flat screen players on Steam. But yeah, budget and porting, that's
absolutely
maybe in the future. But it's, we were thinking about it.
I think it's a good addition to the game, but of course, budget decides everything, and you know you shouldn't just make the decision on the go. But I could see a lot of players be like, I would like to invite my friend who doesn't have a VR headset to play with us, because it runs on a potato, I guess.
It's a better potato. No, other better quest potato. You can't complain with the quest 3 or 2.
All right, this has been a lot of fun. Is there anything you would like to promote before we go, or maybe it's an advice to some people?
Mine to promote Deadly Delivery again will come out at 4th December this year. If you have a headset, maybe buy it and play as a goblin, deliver some parcels. And general advice, I will repeat advice I got from the Pixel last year. Magic happens outside of your comfort zone.
That is true.
Yeah.
I will end it on that. And for the people who are watching, leave a like, comment, let me know what you think about the episode. If you want to reach out to Mille, I will leave the information. And if you liked it, like. And if you disliked it, I don't know why you're still here. Yeah, have a good one. I'll see you in the next one. Hey, you. Sorry to interrupt, but if you're really enjoying this episode, don't just watch. Let me know what you think in the comments. It really motivates me and helps the channel. Leave a like if you like it and subscribe. It's a simple thing, but it really helps the channel. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next one.